Welcome to the Creating the Future podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Krause. And today we're going to talk about the teen brain with Mr. Brian Kiewit. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty great. Thanks for having me.
I was so happy to have you on here, a veteran of TCDS. How many years, Brian, are you going on?
This is my 17th.
17th, and all in the middle school. Bro, you had some ACE in the elementary.
There was a little break there, yeah, where we took on the gifted program, but I think the school and I agreed your strengths are in the middle school, and they're served well with you there, so I was ready to go back.
So tell us about your journey. That's a lot of years with teenagers, preteens. Tell us about your journey as a middle school teacher.
It's interesting. I tell my kids all the time, if I traveled back in time and found little Brian Kiewit and I said, hey, guess what happens to you? He would look up at me and he would say, I'd probably become an army commando. And I'd say, well, and he'd say, then I'm probably a toy inventor. And I'd put my arm around him and say, you're going to be a teacher, buddy. And then his little head would sink down on the desk in tears, like, oh no, I failed. What happened? I didn't feel the calling or anything as a young man. I went to the army and then I went through college. And as I was leaving college, I had different ideas about what I would do with my geography degree. And I got to talking to a friend of a friend who lived out here in Tucson. And he had all these creative ideas about what he wanted to do. And I thought, well, I'd rather go have fun for a while than get started on a career. So I moved out here to Tucson and we had a TV show for a while. And there's bits of that on YouTube, so we won't be saying the name of that TV show. We had a rock band and stuff. And you have to pay bills. So I'm working at Magpie's Pizza. I'm handing out flyers for a dollar an hour or whatever. And he says, you should do what I do, which is substitute teach. It's so great. The phone rings in the morning and you decide whether or not you want to do it. So I started substitute teaching. It went really well, especially over at Seacrest Middle School. The kids started calling me Mr. Shaggy. Mr. Shaggy, when are you going to be back? You should just be a teacher. You should be here all the time. And I realized that sometimes I was looking and implementing lesson plans that I just knew, man, this could be better. This could be more fun. And so with my wife's encouragement and stuff, I pursued teaching and just knew middle school was going to be the fit.
Hmm. Yeah. So what have your experiences taught you about what middle school students need in order to develop positively? What is that experience? I know you've done some research on this topic as well, on the teen brain. What have you discovered?
Well, so like I say, with a lot of substitute teaching, I did everything from elementary to high school, and I saw all the stuff. And I realized those middle years, there's definitely a reason we give them their own school. You know, they're a middle school or a junior high, some of us call them. Some of them still have the great capacity to, they want to sing songs in order to learn. They want to dance. They want to do funny skits. They just want to be interactive and have fun. And yet they're of an age and a brain or soul capacity to take on responsibility, to accomplish missions that are given them. It's just such a unique time where what we call adolescence, where they still have the childlike, wide-eyed embracing of the world. They want to know more. And yet they're also on the path to adulthood. And so they're starting to really figure things out, including themselves. So one of the things, as I got deeper into being a middle school teacher, it always shocked me the difference between an eighth grader and a sixth grader. And at first I was like, well, these eighth graders are acting like that because they didn't have me as a sixth grade teacher. But once they've had me, then there'll be these little machines that understand when we say, hey, you need to sit down. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That didn't turn out to be true. It doesn't matter who they have. Their brain goes through such a unique change on their path to adulthood that it was leaving me speechless. Not angry, not questioning, wow, I guess I'm not a good teacher. I don't understand how to do this, but there must be something I'm missing here about what they're experiencing. And And being an adult, we've all gone through adolescence, but I don't think many of us, we recall feeling tested, being confused, feeling awkward, but we don't remember all the specific steps or problems or areas that we were just challenged. Mm-hmm. So I started investigating it. And one of the books I came across, which is called Brainstorm by Daniel Siegel, he just laid out the steps, you know, at least according to his perspective, about these specific things really define what teenagers are going through. And reading that and seeing it just opened my eyes to be in there more to help and foster their growth rather than pushing back in that kind of old teacher way of, why are you acting like this? Mm-hmm. Like, well, actually, I know why you're acting like this more than you do. Mm. So let's roll with it.
So it creates more of a united approach to their experience, to your experience, versus this constant kind of me against them, you know, very teacher-centric. Here are my rules. Here's how we do things. And when you don't do them, I take that personally. And now we've got a problem. And kind of
your
relationship with all of your student kind of hinges on this, like, yeah, I use the term kind of an old school sort of mentality. So what do you do, like practically speaking, tactically, to build trust with students, to build connection with students, and then to create the conditions for them to build trust and connection with one another, given that, you know, from that journey of 6th, 7th to 8th, their brain is literally forming.
Yeah, that's it.
It's changing every day. So how do you do it? How do you establish trust and connection?
So one of the things that works really well with me, when I came here 17 years ago and we were still on a very standard American grading system. So A through F letter grades based on what they're turning in, how they're testing, et cetera, et cetera. So my very first year, they said, we do this thing called meet and greet and all the families come and they're just going to meet you and they're going to learn all about you. And I thought, oh, well, I know what'll be fun. So I put up all this information on my board about me, and it's a slideshow presentation. And we get to this slide where it says, you will get Fs in my class. Get ready. And these loving, supportive parents at TCDS, like their jaws drop, like, oh, this guy's not going to last here because there's no way my baby's getting Fs. So I keep clicking through, and there's three Fs that I try to use throughout my teaching day and week and career. So the first is to be fair. So I want to learn about my kids. I want to treat them with respect and make them understand that that's a two-way street, that if I show it to them, they should show it back. You're not always going to get it. Mm-hmm. But if you treat people fair, if you learn who they are and their needs, then it really sets the classroom up for success, in my opinion. The second one, because I am somewhat old school, is to be firm. Mm-hmm. Not scary, not mean, not punitive, but firm. These are the expectations. This is how my classroom should run if you want to earn that third F. And I know you do. Everybody wants Fs. And the third F is fun. What little of my own middle school I can experience beyond my peers. Because when I think back on middle school, I think about my friendships and the stuff we did. And if turns out if we embrace that about teens, if we realize that they're really living moment to moment and focused on that, it makes our lives easier. But the things I do remember is that third F, that fun. School should be fun, not a party. I do not notice that one of the Fs wasn't friend. That's out of my realm to be a 51-year-old career teacher who wants to be friends with a 13-year-old. Mm. That's not part of it. But to make school fun so that they wake up and know that there's a safe space to go to where, fine, I guess I'll learn about the American Revolution, but at least it'll be fun. Mm-hmm. We'll find ways to laugh about it, to integrate the learning.
To speak to one of the Fs, firm, in many ways, being firm allows for more fun to be had,
right?
Because students know that you've got all their best interests in mind, and there's going to be times where you need to be firm in a way that's about them, not about you, right? There's a big difference between that behavior offends me. And so now I'm going to be like, excuse my language, pissed, mad,
right?
Like angry. Well, that's not firm. Firm is, remember, here's the boundary we establish,
right,
for our collective good, so that, because it's fair, right, for everyone, and it allows us to have fun together.
That's it.
For them to have fun, for you to also have
fun. Well, and it really helps out with the, for instance, today at school is picture day. I have these amazing eighth graders who are eighth graders and want to hang out and talk and not be in a straight line. But they're organizing themselves and stuff, and then they start to wander and get off task and cluster, and it's other students who turn to each other and say, guys, he's getting that look. And the line sort of strains itself out, like, well, when Mr. Kiefit's in a good mood, then the day is so much better for everybody. So let's all work on that. And again, it's not about just keeping me happy. It's the classroom. Can we look out for each other? Because you completely outnumber me. If you really wanted to, you could take over this classroom.
Yeah. So you have fun too. What do you enjoy most about working with teens? What's fun about your day-to-day, week-to-week, year-to-year working with 12
to 15 year olds? So I think it goes back to the thing we were discussing earlier about me even finding my way into teaching. When I deal with younger students, the level of need as far as love or a hug or, Mr. Kiva, he's looking at me, you know, and I just don't have that in me. Like, that's not my problem, but you need to sort that out for yourself.
Yeah.
When I venture into high school, and very rightfully so, those people are so close to their adulthood and their later life. They don't have a lot of time to open the door and let you in unless you are that teacher. Mm-hmm. Middle school, the reward there is that you do have those amazing young mindset students who want to create a song to learn about the Egyptian pharaoh Hatshepsut. Let's do it. It's got to be a rap, Mr. Kiva. Come on, let's do it. That's going to help me. And then you have the closer to high school or closer to adulthood students that are firmly focused on who they are, where they want to be. They have questions about life that are really deep and meaningful, and you can see the struggle of what they're going through. You can't pry. You can't push open doors into them. You know, I always let them know. I always ask, I should say, is there anything I can do? If there is, let me know, rather than pry. So I think it's just that combination of young fun mixed with that journey to the bigger unknown that they're all on.
You've discovered clearly kind of a sweet spot in terms of kind of, you know, your calling, where you feel that you can, you know, be the most effective. For a lot that are listening who have children who are teenagers,
sure,
you know, parents, grandparents, it's hard raising teens. Granted, your experience as a teacher, you've got them for a few hours a day, right?
Right.
In a very different context, different setting. Although I do believe that there's probably a lot of things that can translate to the home setting, things that you apply, strategies, mindsets. What advice would you give to families, just individuals listening who maybe have teenagers or work with teenagers? What are some things that those individuals can do to maintain a healthy relationship with teenagers through those really difficult, often challenging times?
So I, based on my research, and clearly this, some of this would go into where you believe, you know, what are humans on this planet for? Where have we come from? What have we experienced? Those are deep questions that I don't even open up in a middle school classroom, because I support their beliefs, whatever they are, and I do not inquire about them, and I ask the same for me. That's not what we're here to do at school. But if you're open-minded about the possibility that humans have been on this planet for hundreds of thousands, if not closer to 2 million years, as Homo sapiens, and you're open-minded that, okay, maybe there was a period called the Paleolithic where we walked around looking for food all the time. Well, that would mean that, roughly speaking, those that were 12 to 16 years old were at the height of their power, their strength, their leadership abilities for a tribe. And here we are, so many years later, where we've, due to technology, healthcare, inventions, we have tripled our lifespan. And so we've taken this amazing human being, this 12 to 16-year-old that used to be ready to be handed a spear and hunt down a mammoth. And we've said, what you ought to do is sit in a chair and listen to old people. And we'll call it school. And it's getting you ready in the long run. I know you don't get it right now, but it'll be okay. So what I would encourage, and I do encourage people to do, is try to keep in mind that with adolescence, so that 12 to roughly 18, although it's different for every human, their brain is going through such rapid changes that the prefrontal cortex, the thing that allows them to think long term, has shut down. They used to, at that time period, go hunt mammoth. So the last thing they could afford to do is grab that spear, step out, and then think, but what if it steps on me? So that part of their brain is shut down. They do not question danger. They do not think long-term repercussions about getting hurt or consequences. And we've all seen this if we interact with teenagers. There's your son up on the roof about to jump. And you're like, but you know better. And they can look you in the face and say, yeah, I do. Then what were you thinking? Honestly, I don't think I was. Well, that checks out with all the science we know. Their brain has shut down while they're on the roof about consequences. Their friends are cheering, jump, jump, jump. And that just seems like the neatest thing. So I would encourage parents, teachers, anybody who interacts with them to keep that in mind. One, they live so moment to moment. Everything at the time is so important. And you just have to accept that. So when you pick them up from school, how was school day? It was the worst thing ever. Okay, right on. I get it. It's fine. Next day. So I'm assuming you don't want to go to school. Of course, I want to go to school. That's where my friends are. Ugh. Okay. Right on. Let's go with it. It's fine. In fact, Jordan, there's been studies that show, and this blew my mind, a teenager who has been cut off socially. Let's say that their friends are texting about going to the mall or something, and they've been left out of it. Their brain is sending a signal to them that is the equivalent of an adult drowning.
Wow.
So sometimes when our teenagers come home and slam the door and say, but Becky's not talking to me anymore, and we accidentally say, it's not like someone died. Their brain is insisting that it
It
is.
is.
And you're setting yourself up for an argument. So to get back on the topic, I would encourage teachers, parents, anybody dealing with teens, remember that they live in the immediate. That they do understand long-term consequences and planning and everything we wish they would do, but that sometimes their brain just overrides it. And the biggest advice would be for you not to take it personal. Even if you're the mom or dad, even if you're the so-called favorite teacher and this child has never given you a problem, at that moment, I'm not saying let it go. But try to understand where they are and what they're dealing with, and you be the adult, take the deep breath, and move on from there.
Ultimately, it's our example, right?
Right.
And when we maintain our composure, that sends the signal to them, like, this is a safe place for you to have that tantrum, for you to
Beautifully said.
be confused, for you to slam the door. It's okay. I'm not going to come and attack or take that personally. I find that, these discussions about kids, teens, and their development really does all come back to the adult
Right.
and what we're doing or not doing or
There we
could do
go.
more of. That really is what sets the conditions for kids long term to be able to get through those, confusing, oftentimes challenging, difficult teenagers. You kind of come out the other end, and for a teenager to feel like, well, throughout all that, I felt loved and, cared for, and
Nice.
for the most part, right? Like, that's hopefully what we want them to come through that the
That's
messy years of middle school with.
yeah.
So, Brian, we're fortunate to have you at TCDS. Our students are fortunate to have you. Appreciate you coming on and talking about teens with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I feel loved and honored to be a part of this school every day.
Right on. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.